We continue on learning the Nishmas David ben Menachem. We should have Yaakov ben Pinchas to Leah. We are in Adios, Perek Zayin, Mishnah Ches. By way of introduction, the Mishnah is going to discuss what's called Musaf HaYora. Yora is a pot, and a large pot, one that was used by dyers, by Tzaba'im, and one was also used by Sholke Zesim, those who cook olives after they would press the olives. People would take the leftover olives and they would cook them. And both the dyer and the one who cooked the olives would use a Yora Gedola of very large dud, a very large pot to do the cooking. And they would put what's called a musaf hayora, the additional two tfachim amount of clay above the top to make a rim on these pots so that the water would not spill over as things are cooking, as it boils. That's what we call the musaf hayora. And the question of the mission is, whether or not this has the status of the pot itself. Would we say that just like the pot is mekabel tumah, this is also mekabel tumah? Or do we say no, it's not mekabel tumah? It's separate. The pot is the kli, and this is something that's additional, and therefore it's not included. So what Menachem ben Signai is testifying about is something which seemed to be the opposite, the reverse of what people used to think. Hey, Menachem ben Signai. The Menachem ben Signai testified that al musaf hayora shel sholkei zesim, the extra part of the additional part, that rim of the pot of those who would cook the olives, shehu tamei, that is mekabel tumah, just like the yora, just like the pot itself is mekabel tumah, so too that extra rim is mekabel tumah. What does he learn this from? Pasuk in Parsha Shmini. Pasuk says tanur v'kirayim, to when we speak about the oven, the earthenware oven, and the kirayim, the stove, and the pasuk says utmeim yihyu lachem, and lachem is there to teach you kol shebitzorcheichem, which means any part of the kli, the tanur, the kirayim, a pot, whatever it is, any part of the kli that you may need for whatever purpose. In this case, you need the musaf hayor, that extra double tefach rim, in order that it not overflow. So that's needed, and since that's needed, that's considered part of the kli, and therefore it's mekabel tumah. And that's true when it comes to Menachem ben Signai said the yora of those who cooked the olives. But the shel tzabaim, but the musaf hayor, that additional double tefach of rim of the pot of the dyers, shotor, it's not mekabel tumah. Why is that so? Because the tzaboim didn't really need it. They were very careful not to make sure that the water did not boil all the way up to the top anyway. Why? Because the dye that they had in there would get ruined from that extra clay that they put anyway to make that extra rim. So if they were using such a pot, they would make sure not to have the water boil so high anyway. So since they didn't need that rim, so that part of the kli is not really, the part of the kli is not needed at all. It's not the chartz. This is no need for it, and therefore the dyer's musaf hayora would not be mekabel tumah. Some say it's because the dyers were dyeing wool, let's say. So they would make, since the wool would go up to the top, that would really prevent the water from spilling over, and therefore they didn't need that extra piece anyway, because the wool itself that was being dyed would take care of to make sure that it would not overflow. So that was his testimony. Because before this testimony of Menachem ben Signai, who some claim was an expert, he was a dyer himself, they would say the opposite. The Chachamim used to say that the Sholke Zesim rim, extra rim, Musaf Hayora was Tor, was Namakabal Tumah, and the Tzabaim was Tameh, because they thought that the Tzabaim, the dyers, needed the Musaf Hayora, the extra rim, more than the people cooking the olives. Because they were afraid that the color, the dye, would spill over. And it came to Menachem ben Signai, who's an expert dyer, and said, no, absolutely not, it's not true. They don't need that. And therefore that's not mekabel tumah. But the musaf hayor of the Sholkei Zesim is mekabel tumah, because it's needed, and therefore it's part of the kli. Perek Zayin, Mishnah Test. This Mishnah we've studied in Maseches Gittin, Perek Hei, Mishnah Hei, several halachos that Rabbi Nechunya ben Gudgada testified about. Heyid Rabbi Nechunya ben Gudgada in Gittin, it's Rabbi Yochan ben Gudgada. So halacha number one, what did he testify about? Al hachei reshes, this is a deaf mute girl, shehi siyavi, who was father married her off, as we said several times. The father has the right to marry off his daughter when she's a ketana, under bat mitzvah, and in fact, even when she's a nara, between 12 and 12 and a half as well. But when she's married off by the father, she's an eishes ish, complete eishes ish, and it's coming to teach us, she yotza beget. So the father married her off, as the father would normally marry off any ketana, even if she were not a cheresh, as he would accept the kesef kiddushin, let's say, on her behalf. She's a full eishes ish, but the get, so who should the get go to? So maybe this get should go to the father. So here we say that she can accept the get, even though she's a cheresh, she's not a bas das. She doesn't have the intellect. Nonetheless, it doesn't matter, because on a doraisa level, a woman can be divorced against her will. Therefore, since she can be divorced bal karcha, we don't need the girl's das. And therefore, she, the chereshes herself, can accept the debt, the get. Val ketana, what other halacha did Rabbi Nechonim and Gudgudu testify about? Val ketana bas Yisrael, she nises lekohen, she ocheles betruma. You have a ketana bas, she's a yisoma, married off by... she's a ketana under bat mitzvah. So if her father married her off, she'd be married oraisa. But she's all, as we mentioned several times, she's married off by her mother or brother because her father passed away. She's married only midrabbanon. As we've said many times, she can be mimayin. She refuses the marriage and just doesn't need a get. She can refuse the marriage by age 12. Nonetheless, we allow her to eat truma, only truma de rabbanon, and we don't make a gzera mishum truma min hator. Now, why would I make a gzera? So I would say like this, she's married to a Kohen. If she chooses, ends up refusing this marriage, and that means she was really never married to this Kohen, she was eating truma as a zara, as a non-Kohenes. By virtue of being married to a Kohen, she can eat truma. But she's only ketana. So after she's bat mitzvah and she stays married, so then she can eat truma d'oraisa without a problem. She's married to a Kohen. But here, potentially, she could refuse the marriage. So nonetheless, we allow her to eat truma d'rabbanan, and we don't make a gzera that we're afraid that he's going to feed her truma d'oraisa. But truma d'oraisa, certainly not, she can't eat, because if she refuses the marriage, then she will have been a zara, a non-Kohenes eating truma when she's not married to a Kohen, because she ended up refusing the marriage. So v'meisa, let's say this ketana bas Yisrael who's married to a Kohen and she leaves a nechasim. So ba'ala yorsha. So this is not necessarily about a Kohen. This is just a ketana bas Yisrael who is married midrabbanan, meaning her father passed away, so her father didn't marry her off. Her mother or brother married her off as a ketana. She's only married midrabbanan, so now she dies. Let's say she has certain some estates, some possessions. We say the husband, bala yorasha. Her husband can be yorasha. Now, that's normally only if you married midoraisa. Do we say the husband inherits his wife if his wife passes away? Nonetheless, the chacham made a takana that midorabana, the husband is able to be yorish even his wife, who's a ketana, who died. How do the rabbis have the authority to do that if on a doraisa level they really belong to her and her family? Why does the husband get, why does he have that right? What authority do the chachamim have? That's based on the principle. Hefker based in Hefker allows the leaders, the rabbis, to declare ownerless and in fact potentially transfer finances from one person to another. That's the right that they have based on a pasuk in Ezra and a pasuk in Yehoshua. Hefker based in Hefker. And therefore, once again, a ketana who passes away, the husband is Yoresh Har Mitakanas Chachamim. What other thing halacha did Rabbi Chanya Gun Gadah testify about? Val Hamarish HaGazel. Person stole a beam from his friend. Shebina'o Bibira. And what did he do? So let's say Reuven had a beam, had a piece of wood, 2x4, and Shimon stole it. And you know what Shimon did with it? He built it into his building. He built a whole house. And that beam that he stole is somewhere in the house. He needed one extra beam from the roof. So Shimon's not going to want to take apart his whole house to return the beam, even though the beam is still intact. And therefore, ideally, you should be returning the object, the Heshivis Exel Asher Gazal, the object. If it's not around, that's one thing. But here it is around. You should return the object. The Chachamim and Takana, that he does not have to take apart the house to return the beam. Sheitan is Dumbav. He's able to pay just its value, and that's it. The Gemara explains in Gittin, it will be caused Mibnei Takanas Hashavim. As a Takana, the Chachamim said, we want to encourage people to do tshuva and return objects that they stole. If we obligate him to take apart his house in order to return the beam itself, he's not going to want to do tshuva. He'll refrain from doing so. So therefore, we made a takana drabanan that he doesn't have to return the object itself that he stole, even though it's still intact. He can pay its value. And the final halacha that he testified about, valchatas hachatas agzula. If you have a korban chatas that was stolen, it means that an animal was stolen and it was offered on the Mizbeach as a korban chatas. But shelo noda l'rabim, but people didn't know that the animal was stolen. Maybe the owner himself doesn't know that it's stolen. But how do you know? You know, he bought an animal, who knows? Maybe the guy who sold it to him actually stole it. Halacha is, and if it's stolen, so it's not his, so this shouldn't be mechaper at all. Nonetheless, we assume that it achieves the requisite atonement, mipnei tikkun ha-mizbeach, for the purposes of tikkun, of the rectification, or the welfare of the mizbeach. What does that mean? So the mizbeach doesn't sit there desolate, and no one's going to be, and no kohanim are going to be sacrificing korbanos upon the mizbeach. Why would that happen? Because if we say that the chatas gezula that people don't know about is not mechaper, the kohanim are always going to be sad. They're going to say, you know what? Maybe the korbanos that we're bringing are all stolen, and they're not achieving any atonement. So you know what we're going to do? I'm not. And now we're eating chulin that was shechted in the azor. This really is not a kadosh animal at all. It's a stolen animal. It's not a korban chatas, and we're eating kanan Kodshim in the Mizbeach, in the Azara, we're shechting Chulim the Azara. This is very serious. You know what? I'd rather not do Avoda than run into this potential problem. So then the Mizbeach is going to be batel. No one's going to sacrifice anything. Yeah, but the Chachamim said, you know what? Chatas gezula, even though it may be a stolen chatas that people, if you know it's a stolen chatas, it's one thing. But if you don't know the animal was stolen, then we assume that Hashem says, don't worry, I say it's mechaper. We have the right to say that it's mechaper. How do you have to do so? It's a stolen animal. The answer is hefker beskin hefker. The same principle. Whatever the Chachamim declare is hefker, they have the right to say, okay, the animal was stolen. No, they have the right to say that it really belonged to this person who sacrificed it, and therefore it does achieve atonement, and that's all for Tikkun HaMizbeach.